Well, welcome back. I'm presuming we're back on the air here. And just want to talk a little bit more about some of the micro level things about our Cambridge elections here. So before our little 3 minute break here, I was displaying what some of the ballot data actually looked like. I'm going to just do this here, not so much to sort of totally nerd out, but just sort of point out some of the things that are sort of problematic in the way people vote. Problematic and sometimes in a kind of a funny way. So there's one ballot here. This is actually Ward 9, Precinct 3. And if you look carefully at it, what you'll see, it'll say candidate C18, C21, C06 with equal signs. What that means is that that particular voter gave a number one vote to, in this case, it would have been Paul Toner, Hao Wang, Adrian Klein, Federico Muchnick and Patty Nolan. And so there were five candidates all given a number one vote, so it doesn't count for any of them. The next two candidates were the two radioactive candidates, Carrie Pascarello and Robert Winters, which they deliberately must have voted last because they hated us. So in fact, the vote went to Carrie, and later on in the election, when Carrie was eliminated, it went to me. So just to show you sort of a good example of how you shouldn't vote, but I'll submit just because I get a kick out of that. I will tell you that every once in a while there's just a little bit of comedy that actually happens when you attend these election procedures. The funniest thing of all, I mean, this was actually one for the ages, was again another person who had decided I was evil incarnate, and they were going to really make a statement about it. So there's one particular voter in Ward 8, Precinct 1, actually gave a number one to Azeem McGovern, Nolan, Siddiqui, Simmons, and Toner. So it counted for none of them because it was ambiguous. Number two to Brown, McGurk, Pascarello, Sabrina Wheeler, and Totten. Again, an overvote didn't go to any of them. Number three to Hanratty, Maury, Joan Pickett, and Vernon Walker. Again, overvote didn't count for any of them. Number four to Hugh Muchnick, Franz Pierre, and Hao Wang didn't go to any of them. And a number five to both Adrian Klein and Vernon Aisha Wilson. So it couldn't get assigned to any of them. And very deliberately, probably with a real point to be made, gave a very last vote to the evil Robert Winters. So guess who the ballot went to? Robert Winters. And it was funny, everybody was laughing at the election commission when this happened. And the fellow who actually does the tabulation, who I've known for 2 decades, he says, "Hey, Robert, you really worked hard for that one." And it was actually really funny. So, in a kind of a difficult election season, it's kind of nice to cap it off with something. It was actually kind of fun. Right. Now, I'm not going to actually run the election, but I will tell you that, if you have a configuration file in the precinct files, running the election takes a fraction of a second, the whole thing. What used to take a week at the Longfellow School Gymnasium, it's just done before you even know it. It's hysterically funny. I thought maybe what I'd also do, though, is, and let me actually queue up the right page for this, is just to mention a couple of other things that you can do once you actually have the ballot data. So I'm going to bounce back over there and just point out here that once you have the what we call the final piles report, you can actually very easily, it takes 5 minutes to do all of them. You can actually see who would be the replacements should there be a vacancy during the term. So for example, Buran Azeem would be replaced by Adrian Klein. Mark McGovern by Adrian Klein. What you're really seeing there is basically slate voting, both part of the ABC slate. Similarly, Patty Nolan and Joan Pickett would both be replaced by Kathy Zusi. Again, they were on a common Cambridge Citizens Coalition slate. A little stranger is Sumbul Siddiqui. I would say that's more of an ethnic association, that her replacement would be Aya Alzubi. Something that took a few people by surprise is that both Denise Simmons and Aisha Wilson, two Black women, their replacement would be Joe McGurk. But I think what you're really seeing there again is the fact that the ABC slate was a relatively weak slate this time, and it did have, except for the incumbents. So by the time you get down to the ones who are actually potentially electable, Joe McGuirk ends up being the one who would replace either of those two. Paul Toner, maybe people would find this surprising, but again, North Cambridge, where they worked at it, and I think there was some of the bike lane issues were a factor. But Paul Toner's replacement would be John Hanratty. And the, among the Democratic Socialists of America crowd, and the little Quentin Zondervan slate of four, of the kind of hardcore extreme left group, Jeevan Sabrina's Wheeler would be Dan Totten. So I think a lot of people have been saying we're going to be protecting Jeevan, like we're all going to be his personal bodyguards for the next 2 years. On the school committee side, I ran those today. Richard Harding would be replaced by Andrew King. Elizabeth Hudson by Eugenia Shrahu. Carolyn Hunter also by Eugenia, Jose Luis Villarreal, and David Einstein. All of those would be replaced by Eugenia. And Rachel Weinstein by Andrew King. I can't give real explanations for much of any of that, really. One thing I will say is that there was, in the school committee side, there's been a lot of talk recently, at least among people who pay attention to the school committee, about the kind of unconscionable disregard for some of the mathematics programming within the school, so that, you know, having requirements of algebra at an appropriate level just seemed to have fallen by the wayside for reasons that I'll never understand. And both Elizabeth and Eugenia, and not just them, but they had really made that into a bit of an issue. And I think that was perhaps it would help to explain some of why, you know, you see a little bit of commonality amongst those candidates. Now, one of the things, let me sort of step out here. One of the things that I personally like to do, and again, this is something you can only do when you actually have the ballot data, is you can actually look and see things, look for patterns of how people were elected, how the votes were distributed in various ways. So I'm going to bounce back over here. We always have a little bit of a trouble with doing this. Here we go. So bouncing back here, and I'm going to first show here, I won't do it for the school committee, but I'll do it for the city council. What you can do is you can simply show the how the vote, the number one votes were distributed citywide. So you can see the candidates are listed from left to right, and the individual precincts are listed from top to bottom. So, for example, you know, not to overdo it particularly, but you'll see, for example, somebody like Mark McGovern has a real tight collection of, you know, 100 plus ballots per precinct in around Ward 4, which is close to where he lives. You'll see people like Patty Nolan have a significant number of ballots concentrating in Wards 9 and 10. Sumbul Siddiqui, who was really the ultimate citywide candidate, but she has a rather shockingly high number of 408 ballots just in Ward 11, Precinct 2. But, you know, she has a few hundred pluses in other parts around the city as well. So what you can see is a rather clear pattern that some candidates do have some neighborhood bases. Again, it's not perfect. Paul Toner, who lives in North Cambridge and grew up in North Cambridge, has a lot of friends in North Cambridge. You can see he has a lot of support in Ward 9, actually being one of the people who had raised some issues about some of the bike lane implementation. A lot of people at Ward 9 had some real issues about that. So Paul Toner, you know, picked up some support, no doubt associated with that. Somebody like Kathy Zusi's strengths were, you know, some expected a little bit stronger in around Cambridgeport, but I guess the competition with the incumbent McGovern is not an easy thing to overcome. But again, you can see some strength in Ward 4, Precinct 1, as well as out in Ward 9, Precinct 1, you know, which is sort of out of her area. One thing I also want to point out here is the great disparity with voter turnout. Technically, you have more or less equal number of registered, residents per precinct. Some have more registered voters than others, but you can see here in Ward 9, Precinct 1, there were 1,362, actually 1,366 ballots cast. You can compare that to Ward 5, Precinct 2, which had only 70. So what you can really see is that certain precincts were really deciding the future of the whole city, specifically places like Ward 9 and 10, and to some degree Ward 11. We're really having a lot more say so than the entire rest of the city. So again, we can call our system proportional representation, but if in fact if it's only representative of certain precincts and certain wards, then that's kind of not really an accurate statement, right? All right. Now another thing I wanted to show is actually the way number two votes look at. And this is something you could never actually tell from the count itself. You can only see it when you actually look at the ballot data. So let me just see if I can navigate over here to show you this. Okay. Again, this is something I imported all the ballots into a database and then basically sorted them by so what you'll see here, for example, in the first column, Al-Zubi had 829 number one votes, but if you look behind those number one votes, what you'll see is that there were 10 of those ballots had no other preference at all, right? We call those bullet votes. They just a number one for Al-Zubi, and that's it. But what you see there here is that the chief secondary preferences behind Al-Zubi would be, again, for those of us who understand the associations of these candidates and the you know the kind of the radical left democratic socialist crowd, the chief beneficiaries of number two support, if you know, and you see that when candidates are defeated, but she was the last person defeated, so you wouldn't have seen it by then because a lot of these candidates were either elected or defeated by then. But basically you see additional support with Azeem Totten and Sabrina Wheeler. Behind an Azeem vote, you see a lot of McGoverns. So this is the ABC connection, as well as some Siddiqui and Sabrina Wheelers. Behind somebody like Doug Brown, you see Patty Nolan as a chief recipient of number two support. Again, both John Hanratty and Joan Pickett were on a lawsuit having to do with bike lanes. So behind Hanratty, you see a lot of Pickett support, you know, more so than anybody else. Again, a bit of an ethnic association behind Peter Hsu. You see Hao Wang, and that's also the reverse is also to some degree true. Behind Adrian Klein, you see Azeem and Sabrina Wheeler. Behind McGovern, you see other ABC candidates, but you also see Patty Nolan, largely because there are a lot of people who only vote for incumbents or vote predominantly for incumbents, so that kind of goes against the slates. You know, behind a McGurk, you see McGovern's toner, et cetera. So, again, I'm not going to walk you across every one of these here, but again, maybe I will at least point out behind Joan Pickett, chief behind her would be Paul Toner, John Hanratty, and Kathy Zusi. Behind Assumble Siddiqui ballots, you see the chief recipients would be Azeem, McGovern, Simmons, Wilson, and Sabrina Wheeler. So those are very much the ABC slate phenomenon you see happening there, right? And again, amongst the socialists, behind a Totten ballot, you see Sabrina Wheeler, Eyal Zubi, and Vernon Walker. You know, I'm sure Mr. Totten wanted to win an election, but he basically ended up being relegated to the role of a feeder to help elect even Sabrina Wheeler and nothing more. So anyway, I don't think I want to necessarily keep on walking through all of those. You can look, I actually have them all posted up on a website. You can look at the same similar things for number two vote distribution for school committee candidates. So you can see basically it's almost like a survey to say the saying, well, you voted number one for Elizabeth Hudson. Who else do you like, right? And you'll see in the number two votes is that's the first hint. But I mean, no, I'm not going to be digging into number three votes and four votes, whatever. But I think just looking at the number two vote distribution tells a little bit of a story, you know, and it's kind of worth doing it just for that. Now there were a couple of other things that I thought I would show. Yeah, okay. So let me just find my way back here, and I don't think I have any too many big additional frames to refer to here, but after the, you know, in addition to the election results itself, you know, some people are interested, like, if you ever want to be a candidate, how much money does it cost to run to be a candidate? Now, so one thing you can do is you can say, how much money did the individual campaigns spend, and how many number one votes did they get as at least the ultimate measure of support? And so I'd rack those up here. And again, this, I start the clock running in terms of donations, you know, for a full 2 year cycle. So, Paul Toner spent the most, really, I think he also raised the most by far of any candidate ever in the history of the city for municipal elections. So in terms of money spent dollars per vote, Hao Wang has the unfortunate designation as the one who spent over $67 per one number one vote. Then next in line comes Paul Toner, Kathy Zusi, Vernon Walker spent a lot of money, didn't get a lot of return. You know, Greg Morey just didn't get a lot of votes, even though he didn't spend a lot of money. That's why he's up there in like the $36 range. And you can just walk your way down there. I can proudly say that nobody's ever going to break my record of spending $0 for the 316 number one votes that I got, you know, for my effort and my misery. On the school committee side, spending the most money per number one vote was actually Andrew King, who spent over $15,000. You'll notice that the amount of money spent on school committee campaigns are always far lower than, or almost always far lower. 2 years 2 years ago, there was one candidate in the school committee who spent an insane amount of money, like four times anything you see here. So Andrew King spent about $7.50 per number one vote and dropped quickly down to Rachel Weinstein at 330. By the way, the school committee numbers are probably reasonably fixed. There'll be more expenditures will show up at the end of year report. So we won't really know until January what a real accurate counting is. There's a lot of bills that are still to be paid, and that's true for the school committee race as well. Right. So I did find that kind of an interesting thing. Again, I am talking about slates, so you can still see up on my website, the Cambridge Civic Journal website, the various slates of the Cambridge Citizens Coalition. The Cambridge Voters for Good Government was more of a nonprofit entity, but they sort of gave their blessing to some candidates, the ABC grouping, there was the revolutionaries, and the, which I have a hard time distinguishing them from the Democratic Socialists of America. You know, really, I think they're kind of the same. I still have no idea how Joe McGurk, who's a very decent guy, ended up at that lot, but he did. And then the Residents Alliance, who I don't even know what they're other than that, you know, it's just three or four people who still get together over coffee. I don't really know what they're doing. So again, on my website, if you want, you can actually see what the full accounting of candidates by how much money they raise. Again, Paul Toner raised over $135,000, which is wild. It's almost like that's like double the next competitor, who is Mark McGovern. But there are other interesting figures that you can learn here. I mean, I tend to have a certain a subtly higher opinion of people who get most of their money, at least from Cambridge sources, you know, so, but there are some candidates like Mark McGovern, Burhan Azim, Aisha Wilson, and that may change actually by the time there's full accounting. Joe McGurk, who I really like, so I, you know, actually like Aisha as well, but they, most of their money was actually not coming from Cambridge sources. Some of it may be because it was union money, and union money tends to favor either the incumbents or the politically connected. But again, Vernon Walker, I.L. Zuby, Adrian Klein, you know, abysmally low figures in terms of in-town donations. So, you know, they're kind of funded from the outside. Some candidates took in a lot of money from unions, you know, sort of like a thumb on the scale, right? I also have them sorted by expenditures. These are current as of this morning, by the way, because the numbers do change as more reporting goes on. And that'll continue all the way through. I'll actually close the books on the whole story maybe by sometime in January, because again, bills are still being paid, donations to cover costs are still coming in. So again, nothing's, it ain't over till it's over. There's the official bank, the reporting that comes from the banks, but that's only monthly, so they tend to be a little less up to date. But again, it's useful information. What you'll see amongst the unions is that there are various just general labor unions spent the most, perhaps related to all of the build agenda of the ABC groups. I couldn't say for sure, but there are a lot of people who are involved in building elevators, electrical workers, iron workers, basically big building. They seem to like to pour a lot of money into those who would support whatever produces jobs for them, I imagine. So the chief recipients of union dollars were Paul Toner and Mark McGovern at the tippy top. And then it tends to be incumbents. So it's then Denise Simmons, Sumbul Siddiqui, Burhan Azim. Jeevan Sabrina Wheeler is a sort of a one-time incumbent. And then some of the candidates, I think, who sort of see themselves as tied in more to the Democratic Party machinery seem to have the connections with unions. So you'll see a few of them go in there. But then a lot of the other challenges, just you won't see them listed there at all. Right, again, if you want to look at the complete accounting for all the school committee, they all did manage to get in their reports eventually. So you can actually see how much they started with, how much they raised, how much they spent, and if there's any outstanding money. But most of the outstanding money is just money they've loaned to their own campaigns, which they may forgive at the end of it all, or maybe when they finally leave the school committee, if there's any balance in the account, they'll just pay themselves back the money that just went in. So anyway, I think I'm going to step out of that right now here, and just to say that I mean, as the spirit moves me, I have to confess, I kind of enjoy playing around with election data. So I may actually produce some more interesting things there. Like, for example, one of the things I've done in past years is I would take all the basically do a mock system where you do what they call a border count, where you give points. So a number one gets scored. Let's see. Let's do it this way. Maybe a number one gets you 1 point. Number two gets you 4 points. Excuse me, 5 points, 4 points, 3 points. So, and then you just see what your score is. It's kind of like the way they choose most valuable players in baseball and stuff. And you'll actually see that certain candidates show greater popularity in other social choice protocols than in using the single transferable vote system that we use. Anyway, maybe just for the last 5 minutes, I would just say that one of the great pleasures I had this past week, I guess it was 1 week ago, I was actually asked to give a presentation along with Alyssa Pacey from the Cambridge Room of the Public Library and Charlie Sullivan from the Cambridge Historical Commission. I was asked to give a presentation in front of a group called the Cambridge Club, which has been around for like 150 years. You may never not know of it, but it's sort of a group of what you might call do-gooders, civic-minded people, many of whom you might recognize their names. And I was asked to give a presentation on proportional representation in some of the history. So enjoyed doing it a lot, actually. And I thought maybe just to, since I was talking about PR elections, I'll just mention a couple of quick facts. First off, I think everybody should understand that most democracies in the world use some form of proportional representation. It's the United States that's the anomaly. Of course, the system they typically use is very party-centric, whereas in Cambridge, we are nonpartisan municipal elections. You're not voting for Democrats, Republicans, or anything else, even if maybe you are privately, but it's not on the ballot, right? There's no party designation, just name and address. That's it. But PR, proportional representation, was really about minority representation. But when I say minority, it was originally envisioned as more like political minorities. Sort of like the political parties, so that they wouldn't be shut out in the legislatures. So they use what they call party list systems or mixed member proportional in most democracies. They're more like parliamentary systems. So the party earns a certain number of seats in the parliament, and then they apportion them. Some of them may be directly elected, but then the rest are filled out by the parties typically. But the single transferable vote system, which is the one we use in Cambridge, actually dates back to 1819 from a fellow named Thomas Wright Hill. It was used in Denmark for about 60 years initially, and was popularized in the British in Britain by a fellow named Thomas Hare. In fact, the original quota that we use was called the Hare quota, and people often refer to it as the Hare system. Popularized by John Stuart Mill in the 1800s. And there were a lot of other people involved in it. What you may not know, and I think a lot of people at the Cambridge Club didn't know, is that at one point or another, PR was used in 24 different American cities. And of all of them, 23 of them no longer use it. Though there are some cities who are using it in minor ways again. It's like a little bit of a mini revival, but Cambridge is the sole survivor. It was something that was kind of rooted in the progressive movement of the early 20th century. Basically, it was nonpartisan elections, city manager forms of government were being popularized. And even New York City adopted it for a while. You may ask, well, why did people get rid of it? I mean, I could go on for hours about this, but I'll basically give you the version is sometimes it was because they didn't like the fact that a black man got elected. And they said, what kind of a system is this? Okay, so that's the ugly side of why it was lost. In New York City, it was two communists were elected. Of course, one of them was a black man named Adam Clayton Powell. So, by the way, a lot of this information is thanks to a fellow named Jack Santucci. I want to give him a shout out to do that. But there were actually seven cities in Massachusetts that used PR: Cambridge, Lowell, Saugus, Worcester, Medford, Quincy, and Revere. They didn't last very long for most of them, but Cambridge was the one that stuck around, right? So anyway, we're just about down here, but I'm going to leave you with the following question. PR, proportional? Proportional to what? I think everybody should think about that. Anyway, I'll see you soon on Cambridge Inside Out.